You're listening to Spraymakers, the podcast that dives deep into the world of slalom with Chris Rossi and Trent Finlayson. Gates are the perpetual battle. The boys break down the move that sets up the entire pass into simple moves.
I don't think there's anything more important than our gates, our starting rhythm, our starting mentality. I mean, there's so many things that are tied to gates. And when someone, when I'm working with people on Give Go or coaching at the lake, it's almost inevitable that we will talk about gates. So why don't we just dive in here and understand it. What about you? You know, when you're working with your students and your own skiing, I mean, what percentage is gates in your equation, and, you know, what comments do you have about it?
So I think like first of all, nothing works without this. Like nothing, any, you know, you can list off your five ideals when it comes to things you want to be able to execute inside the course. Nothing works if you're on the wrong line. And it doesn't need to be perfect, but nothing works if you're not on a high, fast line. And I think like with my skiing, and this is entirely accurate. Every single pass is going to be 85% of my attention, 85% of my focus, 85% of my calculations are going to be on the setup. They're going to be on the gates. They're going to be on the start. You know, and I always relate this to people that it's not the gates. It's not, you know, because it's not about going through the gates. If you were a free skier and you wanted your first turn to be as good as your fifth, you would approach this in the exact same manner. This has nothing to do with the gates. It has everything to do with establishing a positive relationship with the boat.
Yes. Yes. I think that was really good that you took it to the bigger picture, where we're actually not talking about going through the gates when we say this term, like, what are you working on your gates? That's the end, you know, going through those two orange buoys at the beginning of the, you know, at the beginning of the course, that's just like that. That's an end result of a cycle that's already been completed. And I think that's a really important thing for people to understand. Yeah. And also, I loved that you brought that all the way back to our free skiers and our enthusiasts out there doing that, because it's the same thing. When I've done a lot of photo shoots where we were in beautiful places, and what they wanted was these beautiful dollar signs down the lake, you know, cutting glass with great backdrops and all that. And I can tell you on those, I focus on my gates just like I'm about to try to run 41. And so it's not gates, cause I'm not going through gates, but it's my opening sequence. So opening sequence might be actually the better way to speak of this. And,
you know,
I
what,
just,
actually,
I love
no, that,
where you went with that.
Yeah. And that term actually might be really that, I mean, that's actually a better term, because, you know, cause again, it's not about the gates. It's about creating a positive opening sequence and its relationship with the boat. It's part of the reason why it gets harder as a line gets shorter, you know, there's a small list of reasons, but one of them is just that, like, there's less room for error. So you don't have that option of surviving one buoy and then making space as you go. When you get to a pass, your more difficult pass, when surviving just is no longer good enough to, you know, facilitate the full six buoy run. Opening sequence. I really like that. So if you're, let's just start creating a checklist. Like, what? It's a short list. What do you think needs to happen? You know, and again, we're always looking for perfection, but it's not required. There's just certain things need to happen, right?
I mean, let's take this from a really high up thought process here. Yeah. As far as I go, because we can get caught up in the minutia, and we have episodes that we've done that, and maybe we'll get to that on this one, like do this, but we start whenever you get to that place where you're running a really big list, it becomes super complicated. And for me as a coach and me as a skier, I really like it when I can dumb things down or simplify them. I'm not trying to, you know, make that feel bad to people, but like, the easier I can make it in my mind, And sometimes that requires really diving in and understanding things. So yes, sometimes you have to get down into the weeds and really dig deep to understand things, you know, to highlight those black holes. But bringing it back around, like, you want this to be pretty darn simple. Like, you know, I just look at it like my whole goal on my gates is to get up wide on the boat. I want to be up in that, you know, as wide on the boat as I can be. You know, I mean, if I could be at 90 degrees and up there and getting ready to drop into my turn, and I don't care what line length you're on, if it's 15 off or 43 off, you know, I want to be as wide up on the boat as I can. And then really the other simple thing is the moment that, or just before the moment that my glide speed and the boat speed match, I'm committing to my turn in. If you just did those two things right there and could figure that out, that those two things to me is the most simple version of what we're trying to do. We are winding up this swing. I want to start with the widest possible arc out to the end of the handle path as possible. And then I want to be, the moment that the boat and I match, I want to be dropping in right then. And, you know, with all of my coaching, I'm going to say that 95% of people are losing their width on the boat before they commit to turning in. Yes. Meaning, if you look at them, when they come up in their glide, it looks as though they're going faster than the boat, faster than the boat, faster than the boat. And then you see this moment where it's kind of like this, like everything stops. That's when you both match. And then you start seeing them fall back, and then they turn in. And yes. I, you know, there's many reasons as to why we do that. And you know what? I can be as guilty as anybody on that. But I know that Trent, that this is a good talking point for you, because I know that in the past we've talked about it, and you said that was one of the things, I believe that's one of the things that really helped take your skiing to the next level was understanding that relationship and making sure that that's your commitment point.
100%. So like, I think just to answer that question, why do 95% of the people let the boat begin to overtake them before they start their turn? And for almost everyone, it's because the line is loose. So what happens when the boat starts moving ahead of you? It tightens the rope up. So then once the rope is tight, people feel like they have the support to turn in. And a lot of people use it as their cue. I've heard people vocalize this where they'll say, like, I pull out. Then once I feel the boat, I turn in. And it's like, well, why did you ever not feel the boat? You know, and again, it's just from habit. It's just from not being directionally minded is the way, you know, just an easy way to say it. As you come up into and through your glide. You know, if you are changing directions as you come up into your glide, meaning you're moving from that outward trajectory to a down course line. And a lot of people do it by design. They pull out, and you've heard this, Rossi. We were probably told this when we were kids, square up to 2-4-6. You know, and I watch people do it. They pull out, they square up to the buoy line, and in doing so, they're running straight down the lake. And even, you know, I had this conversation, you know, I was coaching someone remotely. And this was one of our first topics. I'm like, you know, you're changing directions in your glide, you're running parallel. And a lot of people think that's your only option, that you
well,
pull out.
Okay. So can you,
and you
can
run parallel with the boat? And it's like, and again, if you just think geometrically, like just imagine, you know, what it would look like overhead, that handle path, it does not need to run parallel until you were perfectly 90 degrees from the pylon. And at that moment, there would be just a brief moment until that arc started coming back in if you had that much speed, you know? So I have this, this is when I wish we had a visual sort of platform to go along with this, because I have this overhead photo that I share with everybody. I know I've sent it to you too, Rossi, and it's a gate glide, and the picture is, or the screenshot is, from the moment that turn is about to come in, because you can see the skier is already moving to the inside a little bit, and it's a perfectly glass calm day, and the skier's path is, as it advanced up to the boat, it was forever arcing outward. If the line is tight, you turn in at them. You can turn in at the moment you and the boat have matched speeds.
I think this is why we talk about the swing set there.
100%. Yes. And that one seems like...
Because that's handle path. That's yeah. When we talk about handle path, I really would like our listeners to understand that if you were to just set a swing in motion, that's the handle path. I think that's why we're so infatuated with the swing and riding the swing. And we're not riding a swing because we don't have the boat isn't stationary, right? The boat is also running down the course. So when you try to make that analogy or whatever that's called, the swing set analogy kind of gets thrown out the window because you're like, well, no, it's not a fixed point that we're going around, but it actually is. But I actually what it is not the swing set itself. What we're really saying is handle path, yes. Handle path. So when you hear us talking handle path, envision the swing set seat going up and down, and that is exactly what we're talking about. And so when we talk about the gates and we talk about winding yourself up or setting yourself up on that arc or that handle path, basically it's like pulling the, you know, if you walked up to a stationary swing set and you grab the bottom where you would sit and you pull that thing back on a nice tight rope all the way up to 90 and then you just let it go. I mean, that's in my mind what I'm trying to do on my gates.
100%. And I'm from the, you know, Central Texas Hill Country. So there's rope swings everywhere here. So that's like, you know, I share this with some of the people I'm skiing with. I'm like, you know, think of how important it is. Like if you had one, you know, you're going to have one jump on this rope swing and you were trying to swing as high up on the other side as possible, which is what we're trying to do at One Ball. Are you going to jump off the top step or are you going to jump off the second step, you know? Or similarly, are you going to climb up to the fifth step and then climb back down to the second step, which is essentially what's happening if you let the boat get ahead of you and then jump off? You're crushing your potential to create speed before the center of the weights.
I mean, that, and so perfect right there. I mean, why do we talk about this? Why do we talk about the height? Well, we talk about wanting to maximize that height because we need to be able to have enough time to get that ski turned, to get our, mm-hmm. you know, to get in our stacked position or our mm-hmm. accelerating position. And then we need to have enough time and space to be able to build enough speed into that center line that when we come off the second wake and we land, we can land on our inside edge and then be arcing that swing or that handle path all the way out to its highest potential before we let go of it and repeat the process. And yes. So it's so key. And what ends up happening when skiers allow themselves to fall back on the boat before, you know, where the boat advances away from them and then they're turning in the classic, what we've been describing, starting with a lower swing height, you it's much harder to get your body to move into that stacked position without the load of the boat. Where's the boat going is what I kind of wanted you to envision. The boat's going down the lake. So anytime you're utilizing the boat, you are adding the down course component of your skiing. Now, yes, you need some of that because if you didn't have it, you'd be dead in the water, right? But like you also don't want tons of down course speed with not enough side to side projection. And so that's where this balance of what Trent and I are talking about is so crucial, and that most people have too much down course component. And so anyway, when you start with a lower swing, you drop in, you're getting hooked up. Maybe if you look at a person freeze frame from a video, most people are really getting into their, let's say it's your pull, but your stack or your accelerating position just outside of the boat spray. And what I try to tell people is the most crucial thing here is that from where you start to accelerate to centerline mm-hmm. is your work zone, period. So the narrower you get into your stacked zone, you don't get to shift the end of that acceleration zone any further than centerline. And because of the handle path, and this goes back to everything we talk about. So, you know, I'm not, Trent, you know what I'm talking about, but like, so what happens is people turn in from narrow and want to pull long, and they want to pull long.
Yeah. And cause they have to, like they've shifted their work zone, you know, too far, you know, they started it from too low of a point. And so they're going to have to extend it or they're going to feel like they have to extend it, one or the other, but really doesn't make any difference. You're going to end up pulling long.
And when you pull long, you're not riding the handle path. You're trying to override where the handle path needs to go. So from center line, So if you turn in for your gates and when you cross that center line, right there would be the bottom of the swing. What is happening to the swing when you watch it swing, right? Because it's attached to a point. It's starting its arc in, but it's a long arc in and up all the way to its highest point. And what happens when you pull long is you're trying to take that handle and you're trying to say, no, this handle, I'm going to take it wider and later, and it's going to be able to go with me. And physics do not allow that. So then what happens? What happens is the line load increases much beyond what any human can hold on to. So what ends up happening after that? You get ripped up, and then you basically have to just go on this straight glide with no support from the rope. And when I go back to gates, that people do the same thing on their gates, right? Isn't that what you were kind of explaining before? Was I pull out, I stand up, I glide straight.
Yep.
So you missed incorporating being in sync with the handle path on your pull out as well. So you never even had it to start. And so that's kind of the sequence of events that I think are really, really important to understand, is that when you're standing there getting ready to pull out for your gates, or if you're free skiing and you're getting ready to set your first rhythm, you need to understand that handle can only go on one tight path. And if you try to take it more aggressively than where it can go, the line's going to load super aggressive and pull you to the inside. So you just have to start to really see what's possible with that handle path on a tight rope. And we're trying to just be as close to that as possible. And if we can, we're going to wind that thing up as high on the boat as possible. And then, we're able to set ourselves up with the most amount of space to build speed into center line, and then go from there.
Here's the way I like to think of it too. And again, we're just reiterating the importance in a myriad of different ways, but I think of it like this. And this one I just think it resonates because it's just so obvious. Like one of the biggest challenges as the line gets shorter is that you've got a shorter swing line. I call it a swing line. And it's a handle path, but you know, if you just think about, as that line gets shorter from apex, so from your highest point back to the center of the wakes, even if you're at the exact same angle on the boat, if the line is shorter, that's a tighter arc. So it's a shorter path before you get to the wakes, right? So as the line gets shorter, you've got increasingly less space to create the same amount of speed required to swing back up and get around the buoys. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of people but let's just say at 28 off, for example, if you pull out, even if you get nice and wide and then you stand and you outglide your speed to the point where the boat is overtaking you, and that potential swing line is getting shorter and shorter and shorter, and then you turn in closer to the bottom, I'm like, okay, so what you've done is you've taken a 28 off swing line and you've let, so much of it dissolve that now you're on a 35 off pass, or mm-hmm. excuse me, 35 off path. You've got this small little window to create the speed. So you're essentially just making you're literally making the pass harder than it needs to be, and it's the same reason why people hate 15 off at that level of skiing, is because they run such a narrow swing line. Because the rope is so long that you can get around the buoys anyway. So they how often do you hear that? I just can't get any swing at 15 off. And I'm like, well, if you're setting the right path, you absolutely can. You've got ample room to create insane speed by the first wake if you're utilizing, the full potential swing line.
That's a good way to say it. I think that our listeners would like a little bit better understanding of what you just said with the 35 offline, 28 offline. Maybe walk me through that one more time, because I kind of left myself like, wait a second, what is he saying?
Yeah. So as we shorten the line, that handle gets closer to the pylon, right? Mm-hmm. So let's just say just for mathematics simplicity, let's say you're skiing from 90 degrees to 90 degrees, meaning like straight perpendicular to the pylon, like that's your potential swing. So if you're swinging like a full 180 degree path from apex at the gate to apex at one ball. Mm-hmm. So let's just blow this out. So it's really easy to visualize. At 15 off, let's say you're at 90 degrees, which I know it's impossible, but just for mathematics simplicity, we're going to do this. think about how long that path is from 90 degrees back to center of the wakes. That's a long swing, right?
Yes. Yes.
So now,
60-foot swing.
For sure, right? So now, but now let's say from instead of 90, let's let the boat get well ahead of us. So we're down to like this 45 degree, you know?
Right.
So now think about how much shorter did you just make that swing line just by letting the boat get ahead of you? So now you're running like a tight little swing line that maybe is the distance of a 35 off swing line. Like you're literally making the pass harder by not utilizing as much of that swing line space as possible, you know? And I just see it a lot, like with, you know, people at 32 off, like that's where that, you know, people get to that, you know, they say 35 off is the first one that's different. And I'm like, no, well, that's because you're running your 32 with the kind of spacing that you would have at 39.
Minimal,
you know,
margin.
You're running this tiny little, like this tiny little run up to the first wake. So like, don't, you know, again, like don't run a 39 swing line when you're at 32 off. Like you've got a lot of room if you use it. So I think, so number one, again, if you're going to be able to turn in at when, you know, as you match the boat speed, we know the rope needs to be tight to do that. You know, so I think being directionally minded is really important as you come up into your glide to not change directions, but to continue on that, again, on that swing line or that handle path, like continue on the path that you started the cutout or the pullout on.
Yeah.
And then I think once people have that mastered, then you need to develop this sort of spatial awareness. So you know how fast you're going, you know, and I mentioned this even earlier this season, but I was coaching a guy, you know, a couple weeks ago, and he just made the comment, I wish I had a GPS so I would know when I'm going 34.2 miles an hour, because we were referencing, you know, when he needs to be turning in on his gate. And, you know, and I said, you know, I shared with him, you do have a GPS. It's in the boat. So through that glide, you know, that, like the best skiers in the world, what they're doing is they're doing a lot of calculations all at the same time. But, you know, one is you need to make the gates ultimately. But the big thing that people are calculating is as you come up into your glide peripherally, I'm seeing the boat, I'm watching myself advance, and then I'm also calculating and recognizing as that advance starts to diminish or the rate starts to slow down, I know that I'm approaching my, you know, that moment where the boat and I are going to be going the exact same speed. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a really controlled environment to develop that sense, and it's insanely important. You know, if you watch, again, you know, we had a big event on, you know, on webcast last weekend. And if you just, you know, you watch these guys and girls, these top guys and girls, there's going to be a commonality there. They're going to be different. The height on the boat's going to be there. You'll notice more variable there. Some people are able to get higher than other people without losing line tension. But the thing you're going to see is very few people let the boat start advancing on them, and they're not already doing something about it. You know, they're not already turning.
Right. Right. So, that's basically get up high on the boat, turn in when you match speeds, you're good to go. I mean, that's the simple. All right. There's a lot of other things that go on there. I think I get stuck on that one. The one that I see a lot, Trent, is what you said earlier about, you know, pull out, come up into a flat glide that isn't arcing out, that is actually, it's like more of a, what do they call that? The square view or whatever, where it's just like, if you thought about it from above, it's like a hard cut to a straight line down the course. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And people are trying to square up. Now, I think that squaring up is a good topic of discussion. I've got a few things in my mind that I'm on, but
yeah.
I see people get to their, I call it the lowest point, but what do you call it when you're max lean, or when on your pullout, you're standing straight up and down, then you're going to go into your lean, and then you're going to come out of your lean. So the moment before you come out of your lean, I call that max lean. That's not like max load. I'm not trying to hammer the boat there, but I feel like I'm in my most, whatever that is, leaned position, exposed position, but I'm moving from tall down to that place. When I hit that place, in my mind, I'm starting to come back up out of it. I don't want to get stuck and then But I think a lot of people get stuck in that motion. But I think from that bottom point, starting to come up, people lose track of what they're trying to do. So what is it? What is it in that zone? Like, what we're setting our edge. Like, we're, you know, when we're standing behind the boat and we're getting ready to start our opening sequence, we're standing straight up and down. We're over our feet. We're balanced. And in my mind, I always want to be standing the way I would be standing if I didn't have a rope. That tells me that I'm most balanced over my ski. And now I'm going to allow myself to move off this edge of my ski. As my weight goes off the edge of the ski, that's the where my weight goes and how far off the edge it goes is what dictates where the water breaks on the ski and how much the ski rolls up, how much pressure I feel and balance. And now I'm falling into that, or I'm moving into that max lean that I just described. But from right there, it seems like a lot of black holes happen. So can you walk me through a little bit of like, what should we be thinking about, or what's happening there, so that people have a better picture of what's going on right there?
Yeah. And this will be universal, whether you're lefty or righty, but I mean, it's your transition, right? So, I mean, it's similar to what you'll be doing, hopefully somewhere very near center line, throughout the pass, but what's very important at that point is that you start rising up to come out of that lean, to roll your ski, onto from edge to flat, but you need to do it without the load plane changing. So, or relocating. So meaning, as you're driving into that acceleration to come up into your glide, the load is going to be directed somewhere near your right hip, as low as possible. You need to come up without anything changing. So, you know, and again, like that's the big mistake people are going to make at that point is they're going to come up and they're going to relax their center a little bit. That right hip is going to fall back. And then all of a sudden the load is going to go from, you know, hip or spine to shoulders, and then they tip inside a little bit and ski shoots outside and ahead of them a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, and it's subtle, like it, you know, we're talking about a few degrees, but you know, but if I just said like, well, coming into your gate turn, do you want your ski ahead of you, or do you want it under, you know, underneath you and eventually behind you? And you know, that answer is going to be obvious, but
obvious. So can you answer that real quick before you move on?
Yeah. So, I mean, I need my ski to stay underneath me as I come up. So as I rise up into the turn and the ski decelerates, it's actually falling behind me. But yeah, a lot of people, they don't appreciate the intensity required to make that movement up onto a flat ski without that, you know, that load plane changing. Like I want to come up without coming up. I want to come up without moving. I want to just drive and come up. But again, where the line of the rope, which is the load plane, where that is intersecting my body at the maximum, you know, at the max drive that you were talking about, it needs to still be there as I come up into my glide, you know, and nothing is free to move until I'm free of the boat, you know, and I don't mean loose line, but I mean, until I've accelerated, and now I'm literally overtaking the boat.
The higher up you get on the boat, right? Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm going to be, and that's going to be the first moment that I'm free to move is when I'm free, that transitional phase. And, you know, I share this with people. To me, I feel like it's about 90% exertion. It's harder work, or I put more input into that than I did the max drive on the way out. You know, it's through my core. I'm wringing out my center, squeezing my core just to make sure that right hip doesn't sag at all.
So, number one, that's really good, because I mean, that's a typical lefty thing to do, is to lose that right hip, because you're going into offside. It would be the same if we started the gates on the other side. Us righties would be doing the same focus. Yeah. But the righties still do it. And that's why you didn't say it was a lefty specific thing. The righties still do it, but because we drop in onto our onside turn, you don't see as much negative effect, but it is still there. So, and the other thing is, the higher up on the boat you are, the less tight the boat's ever going to feel on you. You're not going to feel as much pull on you. So that's all I was kind of getting at. Now, going back to when you're at that max lean or however you describe it, what is on your gait pullout? What is at max lean, if you had a 1 to 10 strain, do you have a number that pops out of your head?
Well, I know personally, you know, like to me, it's going to be a 7, but I think that's, it depends on a lot of how you move. And again, it's not that I'm trying to load the rope like crazy, but I think of it like this, I go out with the same energy I intend to come in on.
Right.
I think that's a safe rule, you know, so that's whatever it. That, yeah.
So you're at a 7 when you're at your max lean. And then what you're saying is you're just going to hold a 7 as you come up out of that. Is that a good way to explain what you're talking about?
100% until I'm free of the boat, until I'm overtaking the boat. Definitely. Right.
So so are you standing up? Are you using arms to come up? Are you just basically maintaining the position that you were in at your lowest point and then just holding tight and allowing the boat to do that work for you?
So I think of it like this and I think like this probably isn't something that needs to be, this is a fairly instinctive motion because we do it in a lot of sports and we do it even with the way we walk. But what I'm doing is because I'm driving in the right direction, I'm driving forward with that lean. I'm actually going to get my ski to move, to accelerate faster than my body. You know, mm-hmm. because my mass is leading it. We talked about, you know, slow versus fast a couple weeks ago. But because I'm driving forward, I then start to come up out of the forward drive, mm-hmm. and then my ski accelerates and comes back underneath me. So there's a bit of an organic kind of nature to that. You know, if you get your skis to accelerate faster, then your body is actually moving.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then from that. This is the one that I still have to always think about, and that is when I'm down at my max lean, mm-hmm. do I want to try to quote unquote cast my ski out wide?
Nah, no.
Right? Don't I want to get as wide as I can though, Trent? I want to get as wide as I can on the boat, Trent. So I'm gonna from my max lean, I'm gonna tighten my grip. And I'm going to just shove my feet out in front because that is going to send the ski out wide. Right. Yeah. I mean, isn't that the mentality, right? So I'm being sarcastic, as people can understand, but Trent, can you just dive into why that's not physically possible?
Well, yeah. Cause then again, we're talking about, you're trying to, you know, you're trying to move your body to a location that simply the length of the rope won't allow for. You know,
handle path.
I mean, ultimately, like at the moment I turn in, at that moment, I want my ski to be still moving out and then my body moves in. So at that point, there's going to be like a casting aspect, like a much more subdued version of what you do at two ball. But mm-hmm. no, through that transition, absolutely not. I want to come up into my glide with my ski right underneath me. I want my body, my ski, my hips to still be outside of the handle in the same manner that it was when I started my pullout and through my pullout. Mm-hmm. But again, if I just stay really engaged as I come up into that glide, my hip orientation isn't going to change. So the direction of my ski isn't going to change. I want my ski to be running that same arcing path. And its direction is only changing to a more down course path as the rope is advancing on the boat, again, as that handle path dictates. And again, if I squared up down the lake early, I'm going to actually be inside the length of the rope. And then now here's all, you know, these potential problems of having to slow down before I turn in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right. Okay. Well, I'm getting a lot better picture. I'm starting to, let me think about this real quick. I got so many questions. I mean, it's crazy, you know, these questions are questions that my, you know, people that I ski with would be posing out there. Right. Like when you go to drop in, like to start your pull out, like we talked about, you know, or your opening sequence, whatever we want to talk about, we're behind the boat. We're getting ready to start our first cut outwards for our gate glide, you know, whatever you want to call that. How much are you trying to, what's your focus right there? You know, when you're standing up tall over the top of your ski, what is your focus? Because I think, a lot of times, like, I'm thinking I want to get some speed and I want to do all this stuff. And what I end up doing is getting really heavy and ropey. And
yeah,
I think if I were to break it down, that I have a desire to move in the wrong direction so that I feel tension, so that I'm, you know, feeling powerful because I'm going to attack these things. But then again, when I go and work on my gates, it seems to go the other way. Like, the better my gates are, the less pressures I feel and things like that. So
yeah.
Yeah. Why is that? Why is that, Trent? Like, is that the way our body moves over our...
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, I think it's like anywhere else in the course, you know, positive structural alignment, approaching perfect structural alignment allows me to take my lean towards my direction of travel, you know? Right. And if I'm a little bit slouchy, you know, and again, I always feel like it's about June before I start being like, oh, that's the body position I was looking for in March. Mm-hmm. But the better my structural alignment is, the more I can drive or lean in my desired direction of travel. And that's when you see, you know, I get this question a lot from people that are, you know, on the 15 off end of the spectrum, you know, or learning to run the course. They're like I watch these guys and girls, like, you know, these pro skiers on the weekend, and they get up beside the boat with what looks like just no effort. And you know, and that, you, the answer is that it's, you know, it's the, they're moving, they're standing and then moving with such purpose that, you know, yeah, that pullout is actually, they can create a heck of a lot of speed in a small amount of space. And then they just, you know, you come up and just take that speed and glide it on that, you know, on that handle path, on that outward trajectory.
That was a beautiful way to say it. I think the other, you know, so it's not, you don't work harder to get wider. People just, that's not the case. Okay. We're not working harder to get wider. We're working smarter and in the right zones. That is a very big key. And, you know, I think what you described in my mind was that concept we talk about, like, skiing without using the rope, like, that you're so balanced that if your ski had a propelled itself, where would you stand on it to ride it? Like a surfboard, you know, or something like that. Like, I think that the closer you get to that, then what Trent just described happens, where it's like, how can it be so effortless that this person can be up on the boat wide and with glide speed and not be struggling here, you know? And that's why, because they're moving more efficiently. Something else just popped out in my head, because I'm, you know, working with my kids and stuff, and we're, you know, starting to get a little more intense into our skiing and a little more purposeful in what we're doing. But one of the things that also I see so much, Trent, is when you're working with students, turning in for the gates, starting to get a nice cut going, and then hitting the pause button because I need to make the gates.
That one needs to be addressed immediately. Like, you know, in reference to what you just mentioned, mm-hmm. you know, skiing with kids, because I encountered the exact same conversation this weekend from a younger, probably a girls two skier. It was the exact same thing where she was attacking the out, you know, gliding to a high point. And, you know, I have this idea when I'm, you know, cause we're talking about teaching kids. I have this idea of teaching kids is like that, you know, I start right from there, like right when they're running, even like when they're running long line, like understanding that your turning point is when you and the boat are like tied in the race is the way I mm-hmm. like do it with kids.
Perfect.
You know? But yes, when you turn in, you've got to be, especially, you know, depending on the time of year and depending on where you are in the learning curve, but you've got to be free to missing the red buoys if you're trying to perfect your opening sequence, which is, again, a term that is new to me today. But I think it's perfect because it helps get away from that mentality of the purpose of the gates is to go through them. And that is correct. The purpose of the opening sequence is what everything else we've just described in the last, you know, 35 minutes. But yeah, like starting that really young, like when your timing is decided at the moment you turn in and you've got to go max angle, max speed, and then just let the chips fall where they may. And if you miss it, then you can adjust it on the next pass, you know, and obviously we're not talking about the day before a tournament. We're talking about, you know, early season or where, you know, where you are in the learning curve. If you want to dedicate a set to okay, I'm going to turn in when my speed is perfect. So I'm going to allow myself to make or miss at all these gates to set. Don't care. I'm going to, you know, find this ideal swing line and commit to it.
I mean, that is 100% my mentality. I mean, it is the going through the gates is the end result of that opening sequence. If that end result leaves you missing the gates by 3 feet early, it's a really, but everything else is all lined up. That's an easy fix. That is start the sequence 3 feet later, meaning pull out, start your pull out 3 feet later, then do the same sequence. And when you and the boat match, you drop in no matter what. And when you drop in, you go and just keep working that whole sequence. That sequence is what's key. We don't just pull out, stand up. Okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to make the gates now. Like that's where what happened to the sequence. This is what we're talking about. And this is where people, this is why we want so much emphasis on gates, is just to understand it. Once you understand it and have done it enough, it'll turn into, I don't think about it anymore, because all I'm really looking for is width and timing. But like with my youngest son, man, he gets out. I tell him, get out wide. I'm like, Kai, get out wide, buddy. He gets out wide. He's looking. He's like, now is my turn. Like I'm matched with the boat. He drops in and he gets right to almost the first wake. And he's in a nice, sweet position to just have that great edge change, you know, that great wake crossing edge change. But he realizes he's going to miss the gates and he lets the handle go away from his body. That brings him up and onto a flat ski. And then he makes the gates. But now he can see that his trajectory is going right at one and maybe not even. It might even go inside of it. So then what does he do instinctively after the wakes? He lays into another lean. Like he's trying to pull against the boat after the wakes. And now he's pulling to the buoy width. And then he lets go of that, stands up, tries to make a reach. And now he has a ton of slack. And he's running down course so much. Now, at the age that he's at, he is slamming the finish of that turn. He doesn't care about the slack. He's like, bring it on. And he grabs on to slack. But then when he does grab on, you can see his hip buckle. There's so much load there. His hip buckles. His body comes forward. Now he's not in that nice stacked position. And now he's in an exposed position to have things happen like behind the boat or bad trajectory into the next side. And I'm telling you, no matter what I tell him, this is the over and over and over again. And then I show him videos of, I'm like, watch me ski. There's never that. I don't care if I make or miss in practice. Obviously, what I'm doing is I'm finishing off that opening sequence properly. And when I do that, it's really hard to explain how good the pass feels. I don't have to think of the reason why we do all of this work for you listeners. The reason why we do all this work on gates is when you get this right, when this opening sequence is right, there is almost zero thinking in the course. You're just riding some. You're just riding what you already started, and it seems so easy, so slow, so predictable. Everything's in line, and every one of you that has spent time skiing knows when I'm. You know that what I just described. You've had that feeling. Yep. And that feeling comes from the gates. It never comes from, I was narrow falling back on the boat. I pulled really long and I had, you know, it doesn't start like that. It just doesn't. So we're trying to give you the reasons and the ways to help understand how to set this cycle up. And now you have to just learn to commit to it and realize that all you have to do is just change your timing of when you start. If you're missing early or you're missing late, as long as you're focusing on that entire sequence. And that's really everything. Those orange, red, orange buoys that we have to go through called the gates. That's just the end result of a great sequence.